This is Studio Plus 972 with Benji Schulman, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I am Benji Schulman, and this is Studio Plus 972. Hope you're doing extraordinarily well out there today on what constitutes a fantastic winter's day. Hope you're enjoying it. Hope you're having a good July winter's time. I know a lot of people are still on holiday, and that is something we're going to cover in the show coming up for the next hour. So what do we in fact have on the show for the next hour? Well, I am here to tell you that, so do hold on to your seats. We're going to be talking about, if you just in case you needed another reason to vote in the upcoming elections, I'm going to be talking about the potential ANC mayoral candidate, which would be delightful. Then we are going to be speaking about why you should care about the Colombian elections. We're going to be asking why is there a kerfuffle around oil and gas for some of the none of the normal reasons that you might expect in the west coast of South Africa. And for the kiddies, and maybe not for just for the kiddies, but for some of the oldies out there as well, we are going to be having a discussion about what can you do for little ones in the city to get them out of the house and into nature and walking around. And we're going to be looking at some of my favorite reserves to go to in the local Gauteng area. So that is all coming up, as well as it's 3 weeks, so we keep finding interesting and compelling a cappella songs for your use. So if you stay tuned towards the end of the show, we are going to be playing out with that particular thing. So yeah, do stay tuned for that. And if you want to be part of the show, please, 061-895-1019, 061-895-1019 is the number to call if you want to be part of the conversation. But first, we're going to take a short break, and when I come back, we're just going to be playing a quick tribute, not quick, but somewhat of a tribute, to Lindsey Graham, who died yesterday, I think, and his contribution to not just to Israel, but to the American psyche in general, because I think he's a very interesting guy, even for us all the way here in South Africa. I am Benji Schulman, and this is Studio Plus 972.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Schulman, and this is Studio Plus 972. I hope that you are having a great day. Now, before the break, as I said, we're just going to talk for a few moments about Lindsey Graham, because he died suddenly yesterday after having just returned from a trip to Ukraine and was meeting the president of Ukraine there, Volodymyr Zelensky. And I think probably, not knowing Lindsey Graham all that well, in the sense that he was an American politician and not someone who paid all that much attention to our issues, but he created in America a certain sense of how the world should be. There was they used to call them the Three Amigos. So it was him, Senator Lieberman, and John McCain, and they were the sort of creators of the sense of American power and an attitude to the world, which is not necessarily, they would sometimes call them neocon today, but they were actually not all of them necessarily neocons, but basically they were the senators in the American establishment who spent a lot of time dealing with America's allies. So Ukraine and working on sanctions against Russia, Israel was another one. Obviously, places like Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, all of these places benefited from the fact that these three, and Graham in particular, were out there sort of flying the American flag in a way that helped allies. And for example, after October 7th, Lindsey Graham was extremely important in galvanizing American senators from across the aisle. He was very good about working with people who he could work with. And he got a whole bunch of them to come to Israel. I think he tweeted out that like 10% of the American Senate was in Israel after October 7th. And that was the kind of thing that he did. He also had this ability to straddle the line when it came to America and MAGA and the sort of more traditional conservatives. He wasn't a big fan of Trump when he started, and then he did some things, and then after the July riots, he wasn't so keen. But over time, he sort of managed to connect more with Trump, and he was someone who he spoke to often. And as a result, he kind of was the old school Republican in the room that also could speak to Donald Trump and get him to do certain things, which I think was very important. And there isn't really all that many people around like him. A lot of the representatives in the Republican Party have sort of left or been thrown out, and as a result, he was really one of those strong voices, and I think is a loss not just to Israel and the Jewish community of whom he was a big supporter, but of people around the world who are interested in freedom and liberty and democracy. Reza Pahlavi, who was the former crown prince of Iran, tweeted that Graham stood alongside the people of Iran in their struggle against tyranny. And so he's definitely, he was 71. He grew up in a small town in central South Carolina, where his parents ran a restaurant and a pool hall. He wasn't wealthy. Didn't come from a wealthy family, and he was the first in his family actually to go to college, and that's where he earned a law degree from the University of South Carolina before embarking on a career in the military, and he served in the U.S. Air Force as a lawyer, serving a total of 33 years in the Air Force and the Air Force Reserve and the National Guard, and he retired in 2015 as the rank of colonel. He arrived in Congress as a member of the House of Representatives. So that's the house that's voted on as a district in a specific area. And then he ran for the Senate. And the senators are the representatives for whole states. And he won the seat of the one that was previously being held by Strom Thurmond. And he made a name for himself in his work on foreign policy, pressing both the Trump and Biden administrations in their fight against Russia and Iran. That is Lindsey Graham, dying suddenly on Saturday night. Will certainly be missed in America, in Israel, and around the world. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. As you should be aware by now, there is a big election coming up in November. They haven't actually proclaimed it yet, but that's probably going to be the date. And there have been a number of drives to get people registered. You can't vote if you're not registered. And if you thought that voting wasn't something you should be doing, or getting other people that you know to be doing, that would be wrong. We've seen quite a campaign being made by Helen Ziller. She's sailing over potholes and rowing down streets that have no working sewerage and gutters. And Herman Mashaba from Action SA is running, and Kenny Kuneni, I believe, from the PA. So it's going to be a big heavyweight electoral campaign. But up till now, we haven't seen anything from the ANC. And the ANC has been having considerable problems furnishing mayors for the cities in their upcoming elections. I believe that they were supposed to have a mayor in June and all sorted out. That seems to have been delayed somewhat because they have been announcing that they will announce mayors in certain places in the coming 2 weeks, which puts it towards the end of July. So that is what the ANC is doing. And the reason, of course, that the ANC is struggling is that they have no high-profile people who can run the city. If you can name me the mayor of Johannesburg at the moment, I think your average person would find that very hard to do. And that's Mayor Dado Moreiro, because he really hasn't done any much, and he said as much. He said, look, I'm coming in, but I'm not going to be doing all that much. In fact, if you know about the mayor, 061-895-1019, if you have an opinion, 061-895-1019, I want to hear your view on the mayor. And this kind of posed a problem, because when you've got big, high-profile opposition candidates coming in, and you've got someone that no one knows in the ANC running, it tends to be a bit of a challenge. And so the ANC has been struggling to find people. No one wants to run a city run by the ANC. It could be downright dangerous because of the risk of assassination and whatnot that you see, not so much up here in Joburg, but in KZN, other places. So they've been looking around for someone who can run the city. And there has been a range of people whose names have been banding about. Dado Moreiro is keen to run again, believe it or not, as part of the ANC. There is also another candidate who is, her name has just gone out of my head, Masuku. Is it Mandiwe? I will check for you. But she is running. There was also a guy, Jabu Moleketi, who was approached to run, and he seems to have pulled out. Jabu Moleketi, Luiso Masuku, sorry about that. Luiso Masuku is the current deputy mayor and the regional chair of Johannesburg in the ANC. So it's a kind of a weird, it's a weird setup in Joburg at the moment, because you've got the mayor, who is the mayor of the city, but his deputy is the political head of the ANC in the region. So he tells her what to do at work, but when it comes to the party politics, which is sometimes more important, she tells him what to do, which is actually kind of part of the problem. So anyway, those two are running. We've got that interesting binary codependent thing running. And then we have Jabu Moleketi, who was supposed to run but has apparently declined. Jabu Moleketi is an old Mbekiist, a good technocrat, and I think it probably, even if you weren't going to vote for the ANC, was going to be a reasonable potential mayor, at least a mayoral candidate. So those are the two sets. But now another one has come to the fore, and this one could be really disastrous in all sorts of ways. And the person I'm talking about here is Frank Chikane. Now, Frank Chikane was also in the Mbeki administration. He was in the office of the presidency and a number of others. And he got thrown out by Zuma as Zuma took over, and Mbeki was recalled and thrown out the party. And he was taken out in the process. He wrote an interesting book on this called 8 Days in September, which talked about that process. And pretty much after that, he was going around looking for a job, number one, and looking for a way to resurrect his career. So what did he do? Well, one of the things he ended up getting involved with, because he is a reverend, is getting involved with the World Council of Churches, where he very much championed in the church the boycott, disinvestment, and sanctions campaign, and really drove the World Council of Churches away from its focus on Christians and really made his key focus on Jews. He also tried to get from there a variety of other positions. He did some work with Durko, unsurprisingly, given his position on the World Council of Churches. He was nominated to be the intelligence chief, inspector general in South Africa, but that didn't seem to have gone through. And so he's been waltzing around looking for work to do. He also, by the way, sits on the Integrity Commission of the ANC, which is supposed to clear up corruption, which I'm sure, as you will know, hasn't really happened in any way, shape, or form. And he also, the reason why he was on that is because he was an anti-apartheid person, right? Basically, that was how he got there. So he is now suddenly being touted as the person who is going to be the ANC candidate. And basically, it's like a 50-50 sort of thing. It's him and Luthuli House, who are looking for a big name in ANC politics to take on Helen Zille and co, versus Luiso Masuku, and co, who are sort of the local leadership in the ANC and would like to retain their relationship with the manager on the city. Often this has to do with the fact, if you look at other cities, that these are people who are entrapped in sort of tenderpreneurship opportunities and would like to keep the taps flowing and having somebody else come in and do that doing something else is not really to their liking. So this is the tussle. You've got the national part of the ANC trying to put someone else in, and you have the local guys who are protecting their behinds. And it comes in the context, obviously, not just of Johannesburg having a lack of service delivery. We've got all sorts of things where cars and fleets that have to do work for the city can't buy petrol. We have a sort of strike of pick-it-up people because they can't get to their trucks and don't want, there's an issue with them working. There's anyone who's been tried to drive over a pothole or a robot would know where the city is at. And also, on top of that, they're providing basically nonsense budgets at the same time. And this is not me speaking or even the opposition. It's the National Treasury, which is ANC-controlled, saying, hey, guys, you can't present us with a budget which is fake, essentially. And what they mean by that is that it's not giving real earnings versus real costs. And therefore, Johannesburg, the national government, is either revoked or is considering revoking the subvention that they sent down to from nationals to run the city. So there's a standoff currently between the national government and the local government because of how things are being run. And if you put this all together, it shows you the sort of factionalism that is going on. And also, you should feed into it the fact that the ANC is in an unofficial campaign at the moment to replace the leadership after Cyril Ramaphosa goes, and so it depends on who's in charge in different regions that different votes will go when that comes around. So the national guys are pushing for Frank Chikane for a number of reasons. One of them has to do with the fact that the Secretary General for Fikile Mbalula is likely to try and be one of the candidates running after Cyril. So that's one. But also he does have some kind of a profile, right? He has been in national government. He is part of this integrity commission, as I spoke to. He's a kind of ANC person, and he's also a reverend, so he kind of comes with a nice, clean image and some kind of profile, and would also bring into the race, no doubt, the Israel issue. And he would try, you know, Helen has tried to do whatever she could to try and stay away from this issue when it comes to the campaigning on the trail, because she keeps saying, I'm not running to be the mayor of Tel Aviv or Ramallah or whatever. It's been her focus. But someone like Frank Chikane will not hesitate to bring that into the debate. And that could be extremely dangerous in this current lineup. So from the ANC side, it makes a lot of sense. But they're going to run up against a revolt. The local ANC may not be prepared to campaign for someone like this because their sort of job's on the line. And also, Frank Chikane may not decide to run because he's still probably going to lose at some level. But he does make a much more formidable candidate. So what we'll be getting is a kind of Mamdani tribe character if he does become mayor, where you have somebody who looks like they're much more... They're far more, polished, and they can speak really well. It's the same sort of, they're in the same corruption network because they're part of the ANC, but it doesn't look like it because he's on their integrity commission and he's a reverend and whatever. And also he's going to bring foreign backing into his campaign as well. And so that will make the Joburg campaign a little bit into what Cape Town was in 2024. Which is not good for anyone. And another reason why people need to get out there and vote. And in order to vote, you have to be registered. And in order to be registered, you have to be living here in South Africa and over the age of 16 and to vote over the age of 18. So if you are listening to this, or you know someone that isn't registered to vote, or you've recently moved, say, from Cape Town or from somewhere else, and therefore your voting station is changed, it's very easy to register. You have to go to the IEC website, and get people to vote, particularly if there's a young person in your in your house or your place. Those are often people who are not voters, so it's very, very important. Really, the future of Johannesburg is going to hinge on if this really sort of horrifically inept and corrupt coalition that's running Johannesburg continues to have the numbers to run the place. Because if it does, we are going to be very, very stuck with some really, really problematic people. And the only way to deal with it is to register to vote and go out to vote and register other people to vote and then to vote for the opposition. Because the people who are coming down the pike, it seems as though the ANC can't seem to get hold of anybody who isn't like that. They find a way basically to dig deeper into the barrel every single time, and it's really not ideal. So yeah, if you didn't have a reason to vote before, I hope that we have given you one now. Now let me ask you something else. Are you looking to reach an engaged and loyal audience? There is no better place to do it than right here on Chai FM. Our listeners tune in every day for music, conversation, and news that they can trust. When you advertise on Chai FM, you're not just buying airtime, you're becoming part of a community that genuinely listens. Whether you are a small business or an established brand, we'd love to have a conversation about how we can work together. WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. Or email us at info@chaifm.com. And we'll reach out to you. Chai FM, your day, part of your day, every day. And I'm Benji Shulman, and this is Studio Plus 972. And we are talking about various issues that are going on in our world, as we do on this show on a Monday afternoon, and always with a Jewish culture and current affairs background. So that is the remit. And if you want to be part of it, 061-895-1019. That is the number to call if you want to be part of this particular conversation. Now, you might be aware or might not be aware that this conversation also might have to do with Columbia, right? Not the university, not anywhere else, but actually the South American country. Why should you care about the Colombian elections? Well, we're going to talk about that right now. Right now, indeed, we are going to be looking at that. Why should you care? Well, Colombia is a country, and it basically was it's one of these South American countries where they have issues like you would see in a sort of Netflix series or whatever, you know, as drugs and cartels and terrorism and civil wars and all sorts of things. And also what tends to happen is that you have wild swinging between left and right of different governments. And in the last while, there's been a very left-wing government, and the president there has a term, and he has to leave. And so because of that, there were two new candidates who came in. The left-wing guy sort of handpicked his successor, someone called Ivan Zepeda, who was the leading vote count in the first round of the Colombia's election. And he was up against someone, a tough-on-crime lawyer called Abelardo de la Esperilla. And these were the sort of two candidates who toughed it out in a 13-person race in Colombia, because how it works is they have a runoff system in Colombia. So everyone runs, and then if no one gets above 50%, then the top two get 50%. And that is what happened in Colombia. And Zepeda is from the Communist League, and he was backing the current Colombian president. And Esperilla is as a right winger and was backed by Trump. So it's a kind of very classic South American right wing versus left wing thing. And in the end, the Colombians actually voted for Espirilla, the right winger, Trump endorsed by a very, very small margin. I mean, it was like a percentage and a half, which is obviously not very much. And it just goes to show, just apropos our previous discussion, that every vote really does count in these things. And they tend to be voted in millimeters, rather. Whenever people tell you, look, don't vote, it doesn't matter. Well, you know, Colombia should be something that should be on your mind in this particular way. And so now they have voted fairly recently, just in June, for a new right wing guy, and he was more right wing than the other right candidate. But that's Espirilla was the person that won. And so the question would be is, well, why should we care? So there's two important reasons. First of all, is because underneath the under the previous left-wing government, Colombia went anti-Israel in a way that South Africans will sort of come to understand pretty well. And basically, it was like a huge issue for them. So, if you have a look, you'll see what happened, and you can actually see how they were dealt with. So, for the Jews, it was a big deal about the relations with Israel as well. And then after that, there is also a South African aspect. So, there's a Jewish aspect, an Israel aspect, a South African aspect. And all worth looking at. So after the break, we're going to be talking about that. So do stay tuned as we look into why the Colombian election matters. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.
High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
101.9 High FM, and we've just been going into the background of the Colombian national elections and why it matters here in South Africa as well as for Jews. And before the break, I was explaining that the sort of very left-wing government had gone out and become extremely hostile to Israel. So they actually severed ties with Israel entirely on the 1st of May 2024. The former president, Gustavo Petro, he compared the IDF to Nazis. He expelled Israeli diplomats. He even banned the sale of Colombian coal to Israel. And he also put an ambassador in to Ramallah. And this made Colombia into the number one voice for anti-Zionism in Latin America. And the new guy who was going to come in from the left, but has now not, has actually, he actually said he was going to make the situation worse. He wanted to concretize it and make it even more of a target as part of their campaign. What's interesting is that the guy who was going to run or going to become the president, the successor, Cepeda, he actually filed a criminal complaint against the former president when Ivan Duque, when he visited Israel. He said that visiting Israel was advocating for genocide against the Palestinian people. Now, what's super interesting about the left-wingers in Colombia is, as I said to you, there's this long history of terrorism and cartels and whatever, and there's always a question about how do you deal with them. And one strategy and one advocated by the left-wing is to say it's called a total peace strategy. So basically, it's the government sort of ceding control to the cartels and negotiating with them instead of like shootouts and firefights with them. So the point is, this guy was advocating for discussion and dialogue with Colombia's internal enemies. But when it came to Israel, he was as hardcore as it came. Anyway, he lost. And so the new guy, Espirilla, he has met with Gideon Saar, the foreign minister of Israel. And it was a conversation that lasted for 2 hours, and he wanted to talk about getting ties of friendship going. And one of the things that he has promised to do was actually establish the Colombian embassy in Jerusalem, saying that this was part of strengthening relations. And he also has been explicit with the Colombian Jewish community that he wants to renew the alliance and the State of Israel to confront narco-terrorism, as I was telling you before, and defend Judeo and Christian principles that are the foundations of Western civilization. And now that he's in charge, it actually makes Latin America increasingly more to the right. We have Milo in Argentina. We've got Colombia. There's a question about what will happen to Brazil because Lula is very left wing. But there's been this movement to the right in general. Even if you have a look in Venezuela, right, which was the number one hostile country to Israel in Latin America and in some cases in the world, since Trump removed Maduro, now suddenly you're seeing stuff on Twitter of Colombian military forces meeting with the IDF. So there's a movement in Colombia away from this kind of thing. But the question I have for you is, well, how does it affect South Africa? Because it is sort of far away. And there's two elements here which are very interesting. The first is something that you probably haven't heard of unless you're really connected to this debate, called the Hague Group. And the second one has got to do with South African coal. So the Hague Group is something that South Africa set up after America was targeting the ICC, the International Criminal Court, because it was issuing warrants against Yoav Gallant and Bibi Netanyahu. And so South Africa set up this Hague Group with a bunch of countries that said it was there to support international law. That was kind of their thing. But if you read it very carefully, what they're trying to do in the Hague Group is to actually create a sort of alternative architecture in the international system where each country that is connected to the Hague Group would pass something called an apartheid bill. This was one of the bills that has been tried to be put in front of the South African Parliament. And these bills basically would allow these countries to arrest and or interdict in other ways, anyone who is suspected of engaging in apartheid, right? Which is, I know it sounds weird because apartheid ended 30 years ago, but there's a kind of international definition out there which they also use. But really what it is a target first against Israel and then also against Americans. And South Africa set up this infrastructure, and there's a bunch of countries that got involved. But the sister organization that's been in front of organizing this as well has been Colombia. And so Colombia has done this, and they are now involved with this. And a number of countries have sort of dropped out of the Hague Initiative after it was created. I think that a lot of countries sort of saw this and said, oh, no, we don't want to be involved. But it's also grown in other respects, and other countries have gotten on board. And the coordinator of the Hague Group, not the country, was someone from, I think, the Socialist International or something, was caught on mic saying, listen, we have to be very careful of what we say here because this thing is presented as a country diplomatic thing. But actually, it's being run by sort of NGOs connected to the Palestinians, and we have to be very, very careful. So I suspect that Colombia's engagement with the Hague Group will be coming to an end. You can't tell, but I can't imagine that they're going to stick around for this. And then the other thing about Colombia is what I mentioned about the coal. So they stopped supplying Israel with coal as part of their things, and who should take it up? But South Africa. So South Africa's coal has actually tripled to Israel in the last while, and that's directly a result of the Colombians cutting off their coal deposits to Israel. I don't know how coal contracts work, but if I was a Colombian coal miner, I'd be very, very annoyed that this has happened. And I suspect that the kind of people who are taking over in Colombia would be more than happy to get that back on track. So our coal manufacturers here in South Africa will probably have to pay a little bit of attention as well, because they might have some new competition on the market. Now, this Hague Group thing that I was telling you about is a big part of South Africa's foreign policy. It's annoyed the United States. And having one of the founding members remove itself, which I suspect is going to happen, would be a very, big blow and a further removal from the ever-shrinking WhatsApp group of friends of South Africa around the world, because I think Colombia was one of those, and now is no longer, I think, going to be so constructive when it comes for South Africa when it comes to this sort of thing. So that is the Colombian election and why it matters for you. Do stay tuned after the break. I'm going to be talking about the best places to take your little Lee on a hike this winter holiday.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is Plus 972 Studios, and we are talking about things that you can do with little people, not so little, not like tiny, but like smaller people, in the holidays for today. And one of them, you just take them for a walk, because I think that people are very worried about screens, about exercise, they're worried about getting out into somewhere safe that you can go and do this with. So I thought I'd put a couple of reserves on the list that you can go and have a look at and that are worth looking at. So these are places where you can go for a walk and go check out something cool, and it's very nice to do. So one of them, of course, just around the corner in Johannesburg, if you haven't been, I'm sure you have, is the Wilds. There is James Delaney, who is an artist there, and he's first of all helped clean up the Wilds, and he's got like all sorts of new ideas. Then eventually he's going to have a coffee shop apparently and all sorts of things, but for the meantime he's put all of his art in it, and this art are these metal animals, and in some places you can actually take young people and ask them to go, for example, to the owl forest and see how many owls are there in James Delaney's forest in the Wilds. It's nearby, it's safe, and it's definitely worth a bit of a walk, because it's very, very beautiful. But now, if you want to do a little bit more of a walk or something a bit more adventurous, have you ever considered something a little bit more Pretoria side? So one place that you can consider going to is the Vonderboom Nature Reserve. And the center of the Vonderboom Nature Reserve is home to a 1,000-year-old fig tree, or the Ficus salifolia. And it's known as a wonderboom, it's a wonder tree, and the legend states that the tree grew to its size because a chief of an indigenous tribe is buried underneath its roots. And the tree was once big enough to provide shade for 1,000 people or 22 ox wagons. It was damaged by fire in 1870 and by a parasitic disease, but you can still see it at the interpretive site and via a protective boardwalk. The reserve also has a small waterfall, and it guards the remains of the Fort Vonderboom Poort, a fort built at the time of the Jameson raid. So there's nothing cooler if you're a young person than to actually go see quite a nice little castle, which is effectively what this fort is. And so, you know, you can take your kids, you can go check out the Vonderboom, this 1,000-year-old fig tree. It's quite cool to look at it and see how old it is. And then you climb up the hill, which is a little bit strenuous, but not too hardcore, and you can go to the fort at the top, and it's quite a lot of fun and really worthwhile doing it. I've certainly done it once or twice in my life. If you are in that area and you want to see something more on the fauna side instead of the flora side, worth going to Groenkloof Nature Reserve. That is a nature reserve in Pretoria. Basically, just as you come off the highway, going on the N1 North, you get off there, and you can get into Pretoria, and it's basically right there. And they've got a number of hikes that you can go, and they've got a variety of elands, and I don't know if they have elands, but they have different bucks of different varieties, and they've got zebras and all sorts of things. And you can also do horse rides there. So if you want to go do a horse ride through a reserve where there's also animals and sort of do a little mini safari, there's no big hunters or anything that are going to eat you, so that's fine. You'll be safe from that perspective. But Groenkloof is really beautiful, and it's, again, Pretoria vegetation, which is different from what we have here in Johannesburg, which is super beautiful and super nice, particularly once it gets to rain a little bit, you get a little bit of greenery, so that's quite nice. If you want to keep it lekker local in Johannesburg, also suggest Sekobos Rand, not far from Johannesburg, about a half an hour drive. They have a range of small walks, a picnic area that you can go to. Lots of aloes this time of year. Also, lots of animals. They have eland, different bucks, zebras, that sort of thing. You can go a walk. You can do a drive. It's the largest reserve in Gauteng. And although it's basically close to Alberton, it doesn't look like you're in the city at all. And you have these rolling hills that you can look around and enjoy. So if you want to get the small people out the house and in the sun, I would certainly recommend it. Also brings us to the end of the show for today. I am Benji Shulman. Thank you to everyone who helps put the show together. Craig, who pushes all the big red buttons. Vusi, who's on the sound. And to play out, dear listener, it is a cappella season. So I'm finding interesting and exciting ways to do a cappella. And so here is the heavy metal classic from Metallica in an a cappella version. Enjoy. I'll chat to you next week.